evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 8, 2019. South Sudanese women demand gender equality on this Global Women's Day.
This is a time that we'll be thinking to invest more in educating the young generation of females, which will be leaders of tomorrow.
And a South Sudanese young lady hopes to make it to the Olympics.
I hope to pursue my dreams of becoming also a pro athlete in track and field. And for just ending this season, I really just want to, I'm just running an 800 left, so I just want to PR, like, you know, make a personal record.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. On this International Women's Day, South Sudan's Minister for Gender, Women and Social Welfare is calling on her government to invest in education to improve women's lives. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
This is a time that we'll be thinking to invest more in educating the young generation of females, which will be leaders of tomorrow.
That's Minister for Gender, Child and Social Welfare, Awud Dengashwil, speaking earlier today at the Nyakron Cultural Center about the importance of providing education to South Sudanese girls. Sumedi Kejo, the Acting Director General at the Jubek State Ministry of Gender and Welfare, says many women have suffered sexual violence during the South Sudan conflict, and yet she says perpetrators are not held accountable. Kajia says the government must ensure there is respect for the rule of law and ensure that the perpetrators of sexual violence are punished.
These things are happening every day, daily, especially during the war, and even now, because there's breakdown in the rule of law. So anybody can do anything, you cannot be held accountable. So unless we become accountable for our deeds, then maybe the women of this country will be in peace. But as long as people are not being disciplined, people are not being punished, they continue committing these atrocities and they walk free.
Kejo says the war forced many women and children to flee their homes. Since the revitalized peace deal has been signed by the warring parties, she says the government should do more to restore stability so that the displaced people can return to their homes.
We really want to see results on the ground. We want to see that we are peaceful, we can access our villages peacefully, we can access even the forest so that we can gather firewood for cooking, and we can travel at night and during the day without anybody jumping out from any bush with a gun to harass people. That is the peace we want, is real peace that can be seen and not a peace that is only on the lips.
Juba resident Lucia Bianza says discrimination against women is systemic and widespread in South Sudan.
Most of the time at workplace, you find that the women can be employed at the same level with a man, but you find that the man will be paid higher than the woman, and yet you are doing the same job. Then there are issues of gender imbalance. You find that there is a tendency, those technical jobs within the workplace, they tend to think that women cannot do, even if you have gone under that course.
South Sudan marked the International Women's Day under the theme, Think Equal, Make 35% of Women's Participation Count. South Sudan's ruling party said it intended to increase the mandatory percentage of women in the SPLM from 25% to 35% to empower women so that they would be able to compete with men on an equal basis. That was in 2013. South Sudan's women activists have been calling for a 35% allocation in government positions ever since. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Meanwhile, in the neighboring Kenya, hundreds of women and activists took to the streets of Nairobi and Mombasa, marching against gender-based violence and the lack of punishment for its perpetrators. Rahel Ombur reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The demonstrators who donned white T-shirts, purple and red ribbons, walked in the streets of Nairobi and Mombasa, holding placards with messages demanding an end to gender-based violence. They called on the government to develop an action plan to prevent violence against women. Reno Amolo, a human rights activist, took part in the march.
Yes. There is a war against our bodies.
Yes.
There is a war against Kenyan women, and together we are raising our voices to say no to this femicide and violence against women. And no consequences befall these perpetrators. We note that violence against women has been normalized and therefore escalating because of the systemic power structures that favor men.
According to local media reports, at least 10 and as many as 20 women in Kenya have been murdered in acts of gender-based violence so far in 2019. 4 years ago, the government set up an affirmative action fund to help vulnerable groups such as women, persons with disabilities, and the elderly. Esther Pasaris, a Kenyan legislator, used some of the money to fund Friday's march and other efforts against gender-based violence.
The initiative started almost 2 weeks ago with social media. And then later on, today, we've lent them support through the GAF Affirmative Action Fund. Why have we done that? We have a vote that says, let's protect the woman. Let's empower her economically. Let's speak to gender-based violence.
Just last month, a human rights activist was reported missing and her body was found booked in a city mortuary. Pathologists and police reports concluded that Carol Mwatha died as a result of a fatal backstreet abortion. However, some rights groups have linked her death to her investigation of extrajudicial killings by police. Hussein Khalid, the director of Haki Africa, a human rights organization, says Kenya must do a better job at preventing this kind of attacks.
We are here today to stand together with our women because we know in Kenya violence against women, femicide has been on the rise. So we are here to call for the rights of women and we are standing together with our women to say that we cannot allow femicide in this country. Any society that does not respect its women is an uncivilized society.
According to a United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime report, nearly 70% of all women intentionally killed in Africa in 2017 were killed by intimate partners or other family members. The report indicated that little progress has been made in preventing such murders. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
A small group of people living with albinism, especially women, continue to struggle to find their place in the working world. Alima Athumani has that story for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
How would you feel if people believed that having sexual intercourse with you would make them rich? Not because you are wealthy, but because of your genetically inherited skin condition. For women, like Stevie Fiona, if this fails, you are quickly branded a ghost and a curse and are abandoned.
Someone who abuses my nature. I feel so bad and so small. I feel like even shedding tears. I feel like going even to collect my mother in the grave to ask her why she produces me in such a color.
This is the life of many Ugandan women living with albinism. Naweje Doreen Mayanja is the chief executive officer of Women and Children with Albinism in Uganda. On the outskirts of Kampala, she provides support to women living with the genetic disorder and can't find jobs in a formal setting.
When you are qualified, it is a bit competitive to get a job. And just because most of these women were denied the chance to go to school, they are not educated, they are not empowered. You find they are living below the poverty line.
Albinism, a non-contagious and genetically inherited condition, occurs worldwide, regardless of ethnicity or gender. It most commonly results in the lack of melanin pigment in the hair, skin, and eyes, causing vulnerability to sun exposure, which can lead to skin cancer and severe visual impairment. Working as a primary school teacher, Fiona was married for 8 years and has 4 children. Her husband asked her to stop working, believing her albinism would enrich him to take care of the family. When that failed, she was allegedly ordered out of their home by her father-in-law. Now, crowded in a one-room house with her children, Fiona's search for a teaching job has not been fruitful.
When I went there to apply for vacancies, they refused. They said children will fear you. Even other teachers looked at me as maybe a curse. So, as for now, I don't work.
According to a 2017 United Nations report, people with albinism face discrimination and barriers that restrict their participation in society on an equal basis with others. As a result, they are more likely to experience social exclusion and poverty. Ugandan legislator Sophia Nalule, who represents people with disabilities, introduced a bill Thursday in Parliament on the social, economic and cultural rights of people living with albinism.
I'm bringing this bill, first of all, to ask for great awareness raising about persons with albinism, that they are not different from us. It is only a genetic disorder which actually brings about albinism.
The prevalence of albinism varies across the world. According to the World Health Organization, estimates vary from 1 in 5,000 to 1 in 15,000 people in sub-Saharan Africa. In Uganda, it is estimated at 1 in 3,000. While the killing of people living with albinism is low in Uganda, a report by the Ugandan Parliament indicates many are trafficked to Tanzania and parts of Kenya for human sacrifice. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a young South Sudanese is aspiring to participate in the Olympics. That story is coming up right after this break.
Do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What makes you a good friend?
I'm kind. I think I'm a down-to-earth person. I treat people the way they are. As in, I take you, the way you've come to me is the way I handle you.
That you're honest in all times to the other person you call your friend makes you a good friend to me.
What makes me a good friend is the ability to keep what my friends tells me, some of the confidential things they share with me.
I'm a man who makes a lot of jokes. I simplify everything. I give myself to people in the first place so that they can also allow me to be their friend. I'm always accessible.
I laugh a lot. And laughing a lot is one of the most things that people really like about me being as their friend.
I would say what makes me a good friend is the way I support and protect my friends.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Wau Town say a civic engagement center sponsored by a U.S.-based non-governmental organization is helping to promote and build peace among people in the area. A local activist says the center enables citizens to interact with the government. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Wau Town.
The Wau Civic Engagement Center was established in 2016 by NGO Democracy International to provide a platform and environment that enables civil society organizations to engage with citizens and community leaders in Wau. The center provides the community with free internet service, library space, and conference hall for meetings and engagements. Linda Ferdinand Hussein is the chairperson of the Users Committee, a body representing more than 25 community-based organizations in Wau to regulate and manage the center. Hussein says more than 200 users visit the center each day to get on the internet or use the library, a majority of whom are university students. Hussein says the center is achieving its objective of bringing people from various communities together.
We have improved space for meeting, conferences and workshops, provision of quality equipment in the center, enhanced networking between various groups, that is to say citizens, CSO and communities.
Hussein says various civil society organizations use the center to conduct various activities such as educating people about the contents of the Revitalized Peace Deal, holding peace-building workshops, and updating citizens about the status of the peace process. Malo Martin, a recent graduate from the University of Bahr el-Ghazal's College of Economics, was checking his email and online job advertisement at the center.
The center has really helped a lot, and especially when I was as a student, this is where I completed my research. It really helped me to garner some information for my research until when I submitted.
Ater Cholkon of the local NGO Chambe Homeless Children, who has held several meetings at the center, says the center allows all community members to hold meetings there regardless of ethnicity or religion.
If we fill the gap between the government and community, and also fulfill the gap with other sectors who concern for development and health, education, and peace. This center, you see, they connect many people here to discuss the many issues concern the country.
The World Civic Engagement Center is equipped with more than 15 desktop computers, which are all connected to the internet. More than 2,000 books on topics like governance and human rights, along with several South Sudanese newspapers, all of which are free to visitors. Joseph Mayan, a secondary school student at John Paul II Catholic School in Wau, says he visited the center to research a science project.
I used to come here to do research in the library. There are so many books available here regarding science subjects, and also there are some books, news books. We are benefiting from them because we can gain knowledge and we can develop our career.
Hussein calls on all Wau residents, especially women, to make use of the center. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, will limit running water to just 2 days a week due to what they are calling a drier than normal rainy season. As Columbus Mavunga reports, the development is raising fears that disease like cholera and typhoid will break out.
Mike Chideme, the Harare townhouse spokesman, explains to VOA the reason for the city's water management program.
We did not receive enough rainwater this season. So this is a natural cause. Some of our supply dams levels are low. The water is heavily polluted. The water demand management program will actually improve on the health of the people in Harare. We will equitably distribute the resource that is available. Unlike in a situation where some areas go dry 24/7, but this time around, all areas will have a fair share of water available.
Benedict Mpokosa from Budiriro, the epicenter of last year's cholera outbreak, says water shortages are perennial. Daily, he fetches over 100 liters of water from a nearby borehole drilled last year by one of the international aid organizations. He fears the worst with the 2-day water supply the city of Harare announced Thursday.
Why? When we have got water in the lake and it's not getting to the people, why? They've got to give us the reason why. It's bad because cholera is next door. It can come back anytime. Anytime. Because people without proper sanitation definitely will be affected with cholera. That's bad.
Adlife Mudzingwa of Community Water Alliance, an advocate for the provision of safe, clean water in Zimbabwe, fears that cases of people resorting to unprotected water sources will increase.
The human right to water has been greatly infringed by what is happening. Some of the interventions that we expected from the local authority. EMA produced a report in 2018 and 2017 that condemned many of the boroughs in terms of the quality of that water. So we expect that the local authority should have ensured that there is treatment at point of use so that people, when they look for other alternative water sources, they've got at least safe water and the human right to water is actually respected.
While the issue of rights and litigation might be in Community Water Alliance's plans, Mpokosa and other Harare residents are not convinced that the drought is affecting water supplies. He sees mismanagement as the reason for them to be collecting water from a nearby borehole about half a kilometer from their homes. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
From Harare, we move back to Juba, where a military court today sentenced three soldiers to death by a firing squad for killing two people in two separate incidents in Juba's Muniki and Mangaten neighborhoods. Wake Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Four soldiers and two civilians charged with the murder and armed robbery in the two incidents appeared in court today. Three of the soldiers are with the South Sudan People's Defense Force. The fourth soldier, who is with the South Sudan National Security Service, was sentenced to 10 years in prison. One of the two civilians found guilty of murder and robbery was sentenced to life in prison, while the second civilian was sentenced to 8 years in prison. Major General Marshall Stephen presided over the military court in Juba's Giada military barracks.
The convicted persons are mature, adult, sound in mind, and have free will, and thereof are criminals reasonable in accordance with Section 22 Penal Code Act 2008, Laws of South Sudan.
The six convicted criminals sentenced today are Sergeant David Manuel Mading, Sergeant Apache Daniel Maker, Sergeant Makwana Chol Magok, Makwan Majang Makwach, Diang Mabora Adiang, and Gabriel Majur. Investigators told the court that all six men worked in a group. One of the civilians assisted the soldiers during the robberies. One of the two civilians housed the other five convicts. The court heard that a seventh suspect, Noel Mabior Majur, is still at large. Judge Stephen said the suspects were sentenced according to the South Sudan Penal Court, the SPLA Act, the National Security Act, and the Criminal Procedures Act. Deputy Military Spokesman Brigadier General Santo Domich says this is the first time the military court has sentenced soldiers and civilians for engaging in armed robbery in the suburbs of Juba. He says the verdict should send a strong message to all soldiers and civilians who take part in criminal activities across the country.
SSPDF does not accommodate criminality or does not even condone criminality. And should anybody commits a crime, it's not part of the SSPDF. And therefore, the SSPDF is there to provide justice for anybody. And this is why those four SSPDF former military personnel have been sentenced.
Defense lawyer Captain Peter Malual Deng says the procedures that were carried out in the case were flawed.
We are not satisfied with this judgment, and as you hear from the court, we have a right to appeal, and we are going to submit our appeal before the court, before the Supreme Court of South Sudan, as stated in Section 88, Subsection 2. And according to my opinion, there is no strong evidence which can prove such big crime before the court.
Edward Lokulubanga, a relative to Lillian Lurit, who was killed in one of the two incidents, says he is not satisfied with today's judgment.
This one here is trying to prolong a kind of hatred in this particular country. Because if at all, these people are supposed to what, to get exterminated, killed, then this is where I see that because of the deceased who is gone, who is very young, only living a son of 9 months, I think this would fit better if at all they are killed.
In November last year, President Salva Kiir issued an executive order directing the leadership of the South Sudan Army and police to bring to justice anyone involved in robbing or killing civilians. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
And now for some sports news. Atieng Mao, a track and field athlete, made headlines late last month after setting an American record for the women's 600-meters indoor dash at the USATF Indoor Championship in Staten Island in New York. While her win shocked the track and field world, she says she's not yet done. As Ayen Deng Bio reports, Mao has set her eyes on the world's largest competition.
Athing Mo, a 16-year-old from Trenton, New Jersey, whose parents are South Sudanese immigrants, set a national high school record in the first round of the women's indoor 600 meters with a time of 1 minute, 26 seconds, and 23 milliseconds. According to Amsterdam News, that time resulted in four new significant marks. Mo set a record for the 600-meter high school national record, the American record, the U18 record, and world junior record. Amsterdam News reports Mo was just 0.14 seconds off from setting the discipline's world record, but still managed to run the second fastest 600 ever. But Mo says she wasn't thinking of breaking any records when she stepped on the track February 24th, and she believes this is just the beginning of her athletic career.
My future goals are to become an Olympian one day, and also I hope to pursue my dreams of becoming also a pro athlete in track and field. And for just ending this season, I really just want to – I'm just running an 800 left, so I just want to PR, like, you know, make a personal record and – run my fastest time yet.
Mo's approach to running is simple. Stay calm and keep your composure.
My main focus was to just try and really execute the race and just run any other way how I just run, rather than just me think about how much bigger of the competition I'm running with, because I was running with pros. I just wanted to stay calm and just relax and kind of just do my thing and let my legs do all of the work and just keep focused on what I want to do.
Like a lot of her peers, Mo does not have a driver's license. You have to be 17 in New Jersey to qualify for one. She wears orthodontic braces and listens to the likes of Bruno Mars and Cardi B.
I think I'm pretty jolly. I'm like, I'd call myself a little kid. I don't really do much. I'm part of a volunteer club in my school and also student council. And on the side, with my best friend, we kind of just have like a YouTube channel where we just goof around and sing covers. So I guess I'm like an average teen.
I have a feeling that this isn't the last time that we're going to hear from you.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
You say that with confidence.
You can't really just like do something like this and then just kind of die down. I feel like you have to keep a smooth train rolling. So that's kind of my plan.
For now, Mo is getting ready for another track and field meet this season, which takes place this weekend. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Friday. We'll now leave you with the song Halina Shtakal by Lomerika San, which means let's get down to work. We've been listening to Lomerika San with the song Halina Shtakal. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your Friday. Have a good weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
bushoko kaselani ya kwana
hey nice
kapta kenine sibudu kukasumagu atake ya kwana.